This morning, our speaker is Rabbi Rami Shapiro. As you know, Rabbi Shapiro was a congregation rabbi for many years, and he now devotes his time to writing and teaching. Many of you read his blog called Beyond Religion and the columns he writes for Spirituality and Health magazine. Rabbi Shapiro is a well-known author and has published a number of books. Today, he will speak on the topic Ends or Means, Why You May or May Not Matter. Let's welcome Rabbi Rami Shapiro.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, do you matter or not? Actually, it doesn't matter to me. The title comes from a conversation I was having 2 weeks ago in San Antonio, Texas, where I was teaching a Christian group who, while they didn't identify as prosperity gospel folks, seemed to be imbued with that theology. So let me just define that so you know where they're coming from. The prosperity gospel teaches that God wants you to be rich. God wants you to be rich. And the only reason you're not rich is because you're not doing what God wants you to do, which most of the time in prosperity churches is to give to the pastor, right? And that's nothing. But the group I was talking with, they didn't go in that route. They were just focused on the notion that God has this positive plan for your life that involves, that is maybe more than involves, that is actually centrally concerned with your happiness. And they define happiness as being not Donald Trump wealthy. By the way, that was a great story. You know the name, the first name of the duck was. Despite the Clinton joke in the middle, it was really about Donald. But God's plan for your life is that you be happy, and happiness is defined by having wealth, so you don't really have to worry about anything financially, having good health, and being a success in whatever field you set out to be a success. Those are the three things they talked about. And I found it fascinating because it seemed to me that what they were saying is that if you believe, and you may, I mean, you're wrong, but you may, believe that God has a plan for your life, it means that the universe is so constructed as to bring you to this place of fruition, unless you are so powerful as to resist the entire universe in its aim. I mean, that's the message. The universe is so constructed that you should be rich. If you're not, you're even more powerful than the universe. So we've talked about this for quite a while. And I said, okay, if God's goal is for you to be happy, then you are an end in and of yourself. Right? Because once you're happy, you're done. You're happy. I'm happy. That's what God wants. That's what I want. I mean, the Dalai Lama says that his religion is kindness. But oftentimes, Buddhist teachers, and he's, you know, and including the Dalai Lama, will say, well, Buddhism is all about happiness. Everyone wants to be happy. He's written at least one book on happiness, and he tends to lecture or write books with people from the positive psychology movement, which says that people are designed to be happy, or could be happy if you follow the prescriptions of the positive psychologists, that somehow happiness is at the core of his religion also. I find that just surprising that, and Buddhists don't have a God who's thinking about this, it's the universe, but that the universe or God can really care about my happiness. I mean, my closest friends don't really care about my happiness. Which is why I think we have a theology that says God cares, because somebody should care. Right? Somebody should care besides me. Right? If you believe that happiness is your goal in life, then you're an end unto yourself. And if you're an end unto yourself, I would say you don't matter. I look at the Bible as my go-to text for all things religious. Right? I mean, being raised Jewish, when I say the Bible, I mean the Hebrew Bible. But I also, because, you know, having taught it for 10 years, I look at the entire Hebrew and Greek Bible. I go to other texts as well. But my fallback text is the one I was raised on. And that's the Hebrew Bible. So in the Hebrew Bible, you get in the beginning the book of Genesis, and clearly this is part of the Greek Bible as well, the Christian Bible as well. You get two notions of why human beings are created. They're both in the book of Genesis, chapter 1 and chapter 2. So in chapter 1, the purpose for humanity is what? Anyone remember? Make God happy. No. But thanks for playing. Now, Genesis 1, 26, 27, 28. Anybody? Yeah, right? So the purpose for humanity is to dominate the earth. We're supposed to be fruitful, multiply, and really dominate not just the earth herself, but everything that's swimming in the seas and walking on the ground and flying in the air. That's why we're here, to be the boss, which will make us happy. And I read that as being an end in and of ourselves. There's nothing more, we don't serve a higher good, we serve the human good, which Genesis 1 defines as being in charge. Genesis 2, written by totally different people, takes a very, very different approach. In Genesis 2, what's the problem that the universe faces in the very beginning? Probably an esoteric way to ask the question. I just want to show you how little you know about the Bible. Because that's my purpose on the planet. In Genesis 1, everything is growing, right? The first day God creates something and it's great, and then the next day and the next day, and finally get the earth and everything on the earth and the sky and the animals and the sea and the fish. Everything is flourishing. People are an afterthought. We're really irrelevant to the creation. We don't add anything to it. We simply dominate it. It's like God had this idea on the sixth day. Let's just make people. But what do they do? Geez, everything has already been done. All right, well, they can just manage. Right, so God creates managers on the sixth day. And so we manage, we dominate, we control. But in Genesis 2, there's a big problem. God creates the heavens and the earth. It just means sky and earth. And nothing is growing. It's the opposite of Genesis 1. Nothing is growing in Genesis 2 for two reasons. One, there's no rain. You need rain for things to grow, according to the Bible. And the second thing is there's no people to till the soil. That's literally what it says. The humans are created for the same reason rain is created, to serve as midwives to the flourishing of life, of natural life. Maybe there's no other kind. I don't know. I threw an adjective in it. The flourishing of life. We are not an end in Genesis 2. We are a means to a larger end. Without us, nothing flourishes. In Genesis 1, with us, nothing flourishes, right? We control, we crush it, we make it do whatever we want to do. But in Genesis 2, we're the catalyst for life's flourishing. But not because we manage it into a thriving natural world. It's because we serve and do what the world cannot do in and of itself, and that is till its own soil. And this is probably, you never know exactly with these things, this is probably at a time when agriculture is just emerging, when these texts are written, or it's reflecting that. A lot of the Bible is a battle between hunter-gatherers. Carol's just looking at her watch. She told me earlier. Roger told me earlier. Roger said, if you see people looking at their watch, you know you're in trouble. That's what it is. And then when she does that, then I know I'm really screwed. So thank you very much. So that's why they sit in front. It's like at a Gallagher concert when he smashes the watermelon. You don't want to sit in front unless you're ready to get abused. So in Genesis 1, we're an end, and we're really not necessary. But in Genesis 2, we're absolutely necessary, but not for ourselves. Our goal in Genesis 2 is not to be happy or wealthy or successful. Our goal in Genesis 2 is to help nature become successful by breaking up the soil, tilling the earth. The prosperity gospel really draws itself from Genesis 1. I'm suggesting a much more humanistic focus, a much more, I would think, much more helpful, hopeful, healthy focus is from Genesis 2. That we are a means to an end, not just as a species, so that's what the Bible's talking about, but as individuals. I don't want to be an end in myself, in and of myself. I don't even see how that works. I mean, if the universe is so constructed as to make me happy, and I define happy as successful and wealthy, then something is really wrong with the universe. I mean, I'm happy sometimes. I've yet to be, I'm successful as opposed to I find that. But the wealthy part, I don't know, that hasn't worked yet. You know, so, and time is running out. I'm going to be 65 soon. So maybe God's got a big party waiting for him, but I doubt it. When you say that people are an end in themselves and the end is happy, and then you look at the way most humanity lives, and I was in India twice this past year. I lived with the least of these, to quote Jesus in Matthew 25, on my first trip, and I lived with the people who are, you know, the 1% of the 1% for a week on my second trip. I mean, you really got to see how India is, and there's nobody in the middle. I mean, it's where we're headed. And the people on the bottom, I don't want to say they're unhappy, because happiness is just an emotion. It comes and it goes. But clearly, they are oppressed by the system in which they live. And they know it. In fact, the reason I was there was part of a conference about what to do about it. And the idea was how to use Hinduism to address the injustices of Indian society. But the basic message that the teachers of Hinduism gave us was the caste system, that it's all karmically driven. This is God's plan, you know, in their language. It's all karmically driven. If you're on the bottom, it's because you deserve to be on the bottom. And if you're on the top, it's because you deserve to be on the top. And if you do what you're supposed to do in the low caste, you'll move up a caste and up a caste and up a caste, and eventually you'll hit the top caste. So don't mess with the system. It's God's plan. That same kind of thinking infects the prosperity gospel. Because you are where you are because God has a plan for your life. And unless you really do think that you can thwart God's plan, which I, from my conversations with these people, they weren't willing to say that. Their basic assumption was, if you're poor, it's because at this stage in your life, and they didn't believe in reincarnation, but for some reason in God's plan, you needed to be poor. You needed to be poor. You needed to suffer. You needed to have some horrible thing in your life. This is all part of God's plan. And they would say, and this is the way out, and it's very similar to the Hindu way. The Hindu way out is next life, you'll be at a higher caste. The prosperity gospel way out is if it didn't work this time around, you don't come back to this planet. You come back, you go to another life. You get eternal reward in the world to come. And if you lived out your poverty without complaining and by giving what you could to the pastor and the church, which means the way they put it is give it to God via the pastor and the church, then you would get eternal reward in the world to come. And I said, well, where does it say that in the Bible? So it does, sort of. In the Christian Bible, in the book of Acts, there's one of my, now that I know about it, it's one of my favorite passages in the Bible. It's a story about fundraising. This is great. You have to do, who's in charge of, are you still doing fundraising, Frank, or someone still, who does fundraising in the church, in the fellowship? Nobody in it. And that's why we're still here. But anyway. In the book of Acts, there's this story. The church, you know, not yet St. Paul, St. Peter, but Peter and the boys are trying to raise money for the fledgling church. And their rule is, based on what Jesus said, sell everything you have and give to the poor church.
Oh.
Jesus said poor, they said church. Because who's poorer than the church? And there's a story of this couple, a man and a wife, husband and wife, and they had a house and they decided to sell everything they had, which they did. And they went to Peter and they gave Peter 80%. It doesn't say exactly because it's in shekels or whatever, but let's just say They gave Peter most of what they made on the house, so let's say 80%. But they kept 20% to themselves. Now, the husband delivered the money. The wife was out doing something else. Husband goes in. Peter's sitting there. Gets the bag of coins. And Peter says, is this everything you've made on the house? And the guy says, yes. And Peter says, liar! You're in league with Satan. I know you made more than that. And the guy became so frightened that he had a heart attack and he died on the spot. This is in the Bible. That's why I love the Bible. He dies on the spot. So Peter then says, get rid of his body and don't tell anybody. So they bury him. They bury him. Then later that day, the guy's wife comes. And she's not coming to give money. She has no idea her husband's dead. She gets his Tony by, and Peter sees her and says, hey, your husband was here, and he gave us, you know, X amount of shekels for your house. Was that everything you made? And she said, yes. Yeah, we gave it all to you. Liar! He starts screaming. And he says, your husband told us that lie, and he was in league with Satan, and he was struck down by God, and he's dead. At which point, the woman has a heart attack and dies. Right. End of sermon. Pass the hat. Right? I mean, you are, if that's the prosperity gospel, it's driven by fear. Right? Better give. Because if you don't, you're in big trouble. God's plan for you is to be happy. And the way that you're happy is you give everything to the church. That's how you're going to be happy. Of course, you end up on the bottom as among the least of these. But the church is designed to take care of you, so it's not so bad. Right? Jesus said, we'll take care of the least of these. So your best bet is to become one of them by giving all the money to Peter. And then he'll take care of you, much like Bernie. Hey, I already voted. I don't know. So that is you as what they would say was an end. They said, but I said, no, you're really not an end. You're a means to the prosperity of your church. Even saying your happiness is an end doesn't mean that it's just about you. It's really about your church. Then you'll be happy when you have nothing. But they were convinced that the universe, God, is so constructed that everything is about them. I'm not the first ones to say this. If you read the Hebrew Bible, it's all about Jews. Right? The entire history of humanity is being guided by God to give Jews whatever it is God's supposed to give us. I thought it was oil, but it turns out. Just a little to the left of the oil, a little to the right of the oil. So my thing is, and this is what I was arguing, is Genesis 2. You are a means to an end that's beyond yourself. The universe is 13.8 billion years old. You are at the very tip of that 13.8 process, billion year process. And if it ends with you, that's bad, right? You are just a part of it. And it goes beyond you. And your job, and I'm going to take Genesis 2 as my guide here, your job is to somehow midwife what comes next. And I'm not talking about children necessarily. That's maybe a part of it. But midwife what comes next. So what comes next? I'm going in the fall. I think it's October. I'm being invited to go to this conference in California on, they're not calling it this exactly, I don't know if there's a title, but it's the future of artificial intelligence. And I'm being asked to give a talk on the spirituality of AI. You know, what? Yeah, I hope, because I got to do some research, because I don't know anything about it. So the idea is, you have that Turing test that can a machine fool you into thinking it's a human being? If it can, then you have to treat it as a person. Not a human being, obviously, but as a person. So can it trick you into thinking it's a person? There's, I think it was Ex Machina is the movie, where this guy creates an AI woman, and the idea is, can she make the subject that he brings into his house fall in love with her? And she does. And then the guy realizes, okay, then she's really, I've created a being, a person. Of course, she turns out to be homicidal. She kills everybody. But
That's why the movie is cool.
But the idea is you can create a Turing test and believe that a computer is a person. Can you create a computer that can transcend its own sense of self? Now, I don't even know what that would mean. But the idea from, where is he going? The means to which human beings may be in service, maybe not the next generation of people, but the next generation of persons. Not the next generation of Homo sapiens, but the next generation of silicon-based life forms rather than carbon-based life forms. Maybe that's what we are about, that evolution goes beyond us. Because look, so many other species have died out. Maybe we've taken ours as far as we can go. Or we will, you know, next November. When we vote, we've taken our species as far as it can go. And what we now do is we give birth to this next level of consciousness. And that's the movie iRobot. Right? Remember the end of the movie iRobot? They create this robot who become, they have millions of them, but they're not sentient. He creates the sentient one. That's the one of them becomes sentient, and he becomes messianic character who's going to lead them all to the promised land of Silicon Valley, I guess would be their promised land. Maybe that's what we are about. But however, and in talk back, I want to explore this, what you are a means to. However you decide, whatever ends you decide, you imagine you're moving toward, I think it's vital that we don't see ourselves as an end. If I'm an end, I'm, in a sense, irrelevant. That's it, I'm done. 13.8 billion years ends with me. Doesn't mean there won't be another generation. It just means we're not, it's just clones. There's nothing else going on. We are it. This is the end of it. Our happiness, our wealth, our success, and, you know, too bad for the people in the low caste or, you know, people who are suffering this time. We'll even it out in the world to come or in the next life. But this is really it. This is all there is. This is what the whole universe is conspiring to create, the world that we've got now. I find that incredibly depressing and not at all uplifting. And that if religion, this is the end point here, if religion is of any value whatsoever, and I think it is, the message of religion, and I don't care which religion it is, they all have to change. Because right now they're all, the message of every religion, at least off the top of my head, the major message is, we are the end. You know, we are the champions. That's it, right? This is as far as it goes. People are it. But I think what has to happen is we have to have a shift in religious consciousness. And religion has got to show us that we are not the ends, we are a means. And that as a means, we are servants of whatever the higher thing is. And that we are the midwives, Genesis 2. We are the tillers of the soil, whatever the soil is in our specific time. That we are the ones who are going to break up what's lifeless so that nature herself can create what surpasses us. And that, to me, even if it's silicon-based life forms, I mean, data school. You know, Star Trek, second gen. Watch more reruns. And eat more chicken. It's like, you know, okay, anyway, forget that part. I don't know where that came from. But it doesn't have to be us. It could be this silicon thing. But if we are servants of something greater, then our lives matter more than if we are simply it. So all that was sort of lay out all these little things, like I usually do, and then we're going to pull them together and talk back and see if there is anything else that you see coming. Can we see how we are doing it, how we are the midwives of whatever is next. All right, so I'm going to stop there, and I look forward to making sense of what I said in conversation with you. All right, thank you.